Hello and welcome to Hero Hype episode 16. Wow, we're getting old. As always, I am Marima.
And I'm Danya.
And this is the superhero podcast from Hyperbool.com with all of your latest news and reviews and thoughts and discussion and controversy and complaints and quotes and oh my goodness, we have so much going on. It's a little bit of a different show, I guess, this week because it's the off season. There's no TV to talk about. It's super weird. What are we going to do without being able to complain about feminism on Arrow? I don't know. We'll have to find something. We do have a little bit of TV news, and then we've got some movie news. We are going to be giving you a brief history of someone related to Doctor Strange. We will get to that later. And in our comic corner, we have some recommendations based on one of your requests, so stay tuned for that. And as always, we will do feedback and your answers to our question of the week. I guess let's kick it off with some of this TV news. First of all, most excitingly, Agent Carter is finally going to air in the UK. Danya, you're like the prime person for this news.
Yes, I am. It's about damn time. I was kind of like sitting around kind of going, well, I've seen Agent Carter and most of the people that I know have already found some means of watching Agent Carter. But, you know, for most people, they won't have seen it. And so Fox UK is picking it up, which very, very strange place for it because I don't think a lot of people have Fox UK. I definitely don't on my TV. So fortunately, when it does start airing, not going to be able to watch it anyway. But I think most people who have a Sky or Virgin subscription will be able to pick up the channel. I would imagine it's going to be a subscription-based thing. But yeah, it's good that it's actually coming over to this side of the pond because the more people watching Agent Carter, the better.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I don't think it has actually aired officially in Australia now that I think about it. So maybe that will happen at some point. Or maybe it has. I don't know. I don't have cable. So I'm a little out of the loop.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, yeah, Fox UK, really, really strange channel for it.
Oh, well, it's always good news, regardless of where it's going to be. Sticking to the Marvel TV theme, we had some news that Luke Mitchell has been upgraded for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 to a series regular. So he was just a guest star on Season 2. He, of course, plays Lincoln, who has the electricity powers, a little bit of a love interest or something, who knows, but he was, you know, helping out Sky and yeah, I know that you have some thoughts about this, Dee. I'm like not super invested in him as a character.
Yeah.
I don't really feel one way or the other about it.
I don't necessarily feel strongly about him being turned into a series regular. I really don't care. In my head, I'm just thinking, yay, another white boy. But I'm just like, you know, why choose him over someone like, I don't know, Mike Peterson, you know, who's Deathlok? Why choose this particular character over, you know, another who has been established since season one? You know, it's not that I'm asking, like, for something completely out of the realms of possibility there. I mean, it would just be nice to have a little bit more diversity in the lineup of regular cast members.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I like Mike Peterson as a character as well. I'd like to see more of him. And yeah, seeing him up to a series regular, I think I would have preferred over this guy, but what are we going to do? We're not in charge of the show.
Well, I assumed that it's because the Inhumans are going to continue to have like a fairly large presence on the show going forward, especially with what we saw with Sky, like getting her own team together and etc. Like, she can't be the only Inhuman hanging around. You need to have others.
Yeah.
I don't see why it has to be like an either or, you know.
Both would be good.
all indications from the season 2 finale is that Bobby and Hunter perhaps will not be playing as large a role. It's difficult to know what's happening with that because their spin-off obviously was not picked up. So I'm curious to see, I guess, how much of a presence they'll have in season three. But if they're not around as much, then, you know, it'd be a good time to add in some other series regulars. And I totally agree, Mike Peterson, all the way back from the pilot, he would be a good addition, and I think it would be interesting. But, you know, I totally understand why Lincoln is being added in. I think it wouldn't make sense for Skye's storyline for her to, like, go back to being the only person with powers around. So you need that, like, for her plot, which is fine, but I agree. I mean, obviously, just if you go back to the original casting, like, there's no reason why he had to be this, like, blonde white guy in the first place. He could have been anything, but... You know, that's perhaps taking it a few steps too far.
That's taking it, yeah. That's maybe taking it a little bit too far because the casting is the casting.
Yeah, so we've got him now. I think people enjoyed him on the show. I didn't, like, especially love him, but I'm interested in his powers, so I guess we'll see more of that going forward. And we'll keep you updated. And that's kind of it as far as TV news goes, which is weird, I know. But Janya did watch the Supergirl pilot.
I did.
So we don't want to spoil it because we totally respect, like, some people don't want to watch it until it officially airs. Totally understandable. But give us your non-spoilery thoughts on it.
Two thumbs up. Two massive thumbs way up. There were a couple of things that I was kind of on the fence about. Like, I kind of was like, ooh, I hope they don't push that too far. And at some points I was like, okay, you may be pushing this. This is a female superhero. Isn't this great? Look at us being awesome feminists. Kind of message was being pushed maybe a little bit too hard for my liking. But it is just a pilot episode. And it's also entirely possible that it could be recut and re-edited before we see it again when it airs on TV. I mean, I guess this is like almost a soft test for some people to kind of gauge the reaction to it.
Right, well, the same thing happened before with Flash.
But on the whole, really enjoyed it. Was really interested to see that pretty much the entire trailer happens in the first episode. So now we don't really know what to expect after the pilot episode, which is fine by me. Really awesome twist at the end of the episode as well, which I wasn't exactly expecting, but I'm super stoked for. I just love that. I think for the most part, I love that the driving force is Kara on herself, her sister being kind of in the background and also partially like a driving force behind Kara as well. Kara's boss being a huge influence, and also another character who I won't spoil is, well,
and
like,
her mother is a big influence.
Yeah, her mother as well.
Like,
and
it's all female.
It's really, it was really interesting, like really, really interesting to see all of the major players, and I mean the major players who are going to impact the plot in a big, big way are all female. And I know that Supergirl is obviously a female-driven story, but that's still unusual, like, not to have a major player who's a man. And I guess I shouldn't be so surprised at that, but I still am.
Right. Well, it's a shame that that's a surprising thing. But I definitely felt the exact same way. Although yes, there are definitely moments in it where it's super overt that they're, like, kind of congratulating themselves for how feminist their show is. But at the same time, like, I don't care. I would always rather have that than to have nothing. You know,
yeah.
if they need to do that, like, kind of self-congratulatory thing, fine. Like, it's in a way, it's it amuses me because you can imagine, like, particular audience members who would be turned off by that, by being like, oh, why is it so, you know, like, why are they ruining superheroes with feminism? Like, whatever. I mean, not understanding that that's literally what Supergirl is about. And that just made me kind of laugh as I was watching it, being like, haha, I can imagine all the people switching this off by being like, oh, gross. So yeah, I sort of enjoyed that aspect. But yeah, I totally agree with all that. Yeah, as generally happens, the whole trailer is the pilot, like that happens with most new shows when they're released. So I think I may have mentioned that last time that, a lot of the elements that people are like, oh, I'm not sure about this, it's all because it's a pilot. So you kind of have to give it the benefit of the doubt in terms of going forward. But yeah, let us know if you have watched the pilot, if you have thoughts about it. I think we have a comment about this a little later in the show that we'll get to, but we're definitely interested in what you guys think, because it's a really different kind of TV show. Not just because it's girls, but like it's just fun and very like weird and just silly. So yeah, none of the angst that usually accompanies these superhero shows, which is a really good time. I mean, even The Flash, which is arguably like the most ridiculous, still has that angsty layer, and Supergirl's just like, nah, I'm just having a good time.
She
So
had like a
love that.
minor blip. She had like a very minor blip at one point in the episode, and then it was like she bounced back quickly though.
Yeah, I
It was
mean,
like
her blip was this is a pilot and there needs to be some like character arc. Here it is. Okay, now we're fine again. So, yeah, that's it for TV for this week. We will be talking about some other female characters in a second, but first of all, it's time for our brief history segment. This is the segment where we give you the background on a character who you need to be clued in about from either the TV or the film world. And this time it's a little Doctor Strange related. So, Donya, who are you telling us about today?
I am going to be telling you about the Ancient One. The Ancient One was born and raised in Kamar-Taj, a hidden and peaceful village that lived off the land and was unconcerned with the outside world. The Ancient One and another villager, Kalu, both sought out the secrets of the supernatural, and together they discovered how to wield those mystical powers. However, where the Ancient One chose to use those powers to help the people of Kamar-Taj, Kalu went on a darker path. Using their powers, they turned Kamar-Taj into a utopia, with Kalu using his influence to become the leader of the village. The Ancient One stayed at his side, hoping to rein him in. Eventually, Kamar-Taj wasn't enough for Kalu, and he made plans to invade a neighboring village. The Ancient One opposed this invasion, and Kalu silenced him by immobilizing his powers, and the Ancient One could only look on in horror. Following the invasion and taking the villagers as slaves, Kamar-Taj became gluttonous and lazy. The Ancient One eventually summoned up the mystic forces to strike Kalu and remove him from power. But the attack did more than that. It spread disease through Kamar-Taj, and very few of the villagers escaped alive. Kalu retreated to another dimension, swearing vengeance on the Ancient One, and his disappearance removed the spell cast over him. The Ancient One vowed from that moment on to oppose all evil magic, and then eventually went on to become the master of Doctor Strange.
Okay, so you might be thinking, guys, that's a little obscure. Why are you telling me about that? Well, let me answer your question that you've probably just asked out loud. You're welcome. The reason that we wanted to tell you about the Ancient One today is because there have been some interesting reports this week that Tilda Swinton might be joining Doctor Strange, which is, I mean, that's interesting, but it's not that interesting. The reason that it's interesting is because she might be joining Doctor Strange as the Ancient One, who you've probably gathered from Donya's description was a dude. And is also Tibetan. So, conflicting things. Now, I'm sure you've got lots of thoughts on this, D, and I am not super familiar. Like, I'm not really into Doctor Strange. I'm only into Doctor Strange as far as he like relates to other characters who I like. I'm not really into Doctor Strange as a character, but I think it's a fantastic move if Marvel want to diversify by gender flipping some of the characters. Well, as soon as this was announced, I was like, why haven't they done that before? Like that would make so much more sense if they don't want to introduce female superhero solo films for a variety of reasons, then this would be a great way to like diversify the cast within the male films. That said, this is like whitewashing to an extreme, and as much as I love Tilda Swinton and I think she's fantastic, she's also like the whitest actress ever alive. And I mean that I can't be excited about like the female aspect if it means that the like racial aspect is being changed just because like I happen to be a white person. I feel like, you know, a lot of people are, I mean, a lot of people are rightly excited because Tilda Swinton is a fantastic actress, but I think perhaps they are overlooking the fact that this is really offensive to people who are from a different cultural background. But what do you think, Dee?
I mean, I completely agree. I love the idea of gender flipping the Ancient One. I actually am very on board with the idea of making the Ancient One a woman. Like, that's really, really cool.
That's having, awesome.
Like, having someone with that kind of immense power, because, you know, that in Marvel, like, Doctor Strange becomes the Sorcerer Supreme, who has like the most immense supernatural power in the world, bar none. And the Ancient One is the one who holds that title, like, prior to that. And kind of Doctor Strange kind of takes it over eventually when the Ancient One kind of like kind of disappears and kind of decides, you know what, I've been in this role for like forever. It's time to kind of pass it on to someone else. Having that kind of established power within the universe, who doesn't completely disappear in the comic books, that power does come back and kind of helps Doctor Strange from beyond, kind of thing. Having that be a woman as like the major established power, so cool, so into that, really, really love it. But that character is an established Tibetan character, full stop. I don't care if it's a guy or it's a woman, particularly. I just want them to stay true to that. Because the thing is that there is a wealth of white characters in Marvel. And there is an issue in that you can't change a character of a diverse culture into someone white. I don't necessarily have the same problem the other way around, and it's not hypocrisy before someone calls me out on that being a hypocritical stance. Unfortunately, comic books were made in a time where racial diversity was pretty much non-existent in mainstream media. So where they would be able to put, you know, a character of a different culture or a different background or even a different skin color or even like sexuality or sexual preference or, you know, even gender identity, you weren't going to get that. Though that wasn't an option, it wouldn't have made it to the page. And if it did, it was a miracle. So we're in a different time where that isn't an issue anymore. So changing it to reflect our society as a more forward-thinking society now, that I almost expect, because they are able to change the differing aspects of how this genre was approached in times where that wouldn't have been possible. But changing a character who did make it to the page, who was from a different cultural background, and making them white, that's erasure. Like, that's not okay. And it's not as though there isn't a very good actress of Tibetan descent who's already part of Hollywood. You know, if anyone is familiar with, God, I'm going to say her name wrong, and I'm so sorry, Lhakpa Tsamcho. Like, if anyone ever saw 7 Years in Tibet, or Himalaya, she is a phenomenal actress. She's Nepalese, but she's of Tibetan descent. And if they were going to gender switch it, you know, you've got an amazing Tibetan female actress right there who is, you know, ripe for the role. I don't have anything against Tilda Swinton. I would love to see her as, like I would be very happy to see her as Captain Marvel. But not for the Ancient One.
Oh man, Captain Marvel, that would be so good. You've convinced right? me on that. Yeah, I mean, everything that you just said, and as you mentioned at the end, yeah, it's not the same going the other way. It just is not the same. Like, reverse racism is not a thing that exists. So, I mean, if you think that that's a thing that exists, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast. Yeah. But yeah, it's an act of erasure, and it's racist, and it's not okay. And I just, the sad thing is that people are getting understandably excited about the fact that they are gender flipping it. And I think forgetting that, you know, in doing so, they're also changing and erasing this huge aspect of the character. And as you said, doing so even when those characters are so few and far between, in not just in Marvel, but in all comic book films and in films in general. But, you know, they had a chance here where they could have preserved that cultural heritage, like made a Tibetan character in a, as you said, hugely prominent role, and made that character a woman. It didn't need to be one or the other. And yeah, I think unfortunately that fact is getting lost in people's, as I said, understandable excitement. Tilda Swinton is fantastic, but this was a poor decision. So it's not confirmed yet, but that definitely seems to be the way that things are going. We will keep you updated. I guess keeping on the kind of diversity track, we've had some news that Aquaman, which is going to star Jason Momoa, we now officially know that James Wan, who directed Furious 7, is going to be the director. And man, he is so young. This is like, great job for him. This is a huge, huge scoop. And I actually am not really into the Fast and Furious movies, probably surprising no one. But he also directed Saw, which I have seen, which is terrifying. And Insidious, I've also seen. I can't say I was paying a huge amount of attention to, like, the directing style in Saw because I was, like, hiding from the television. But, you know, he's obviously a director who can handle himself and knows what he's doing. And he's done Furious 7, so he has practiced with large franchises. And, you know, that's definitely encouraging. What do you think about this?
I am really into it. I like the idea of him taking up the Aquaman mantle and kind of getting involved. Unlike you, I actually like the Fast and Furious films.
Oh God,
I'm trash. I'm terrible. I know. There's something about them I just like inherently enjoy.
Yeah,
and I actually really enjoyed Furious. I'm terrible. I know I'm the worst, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it because obviously the direction that they're going with this is, you know, that they are going to be bringing in a slightly more diverse culture. Like, we've seen it already from Aquaman's look. So having someone take this on and know that that culture is probably going to be preserved, that's really encouraging for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also think, you know, whether you like it or not, like, Aquaman, well, DC are kind of going this, like, people might get mad, but it is, they're going definitely, like, for a diverse film, diverse creative team. As you said, we have seen it with Aquaman's look already, and I mean, would he have gotten this job if they weren't trying to push Aquaman as, like, their diverse film? Maybe not. But at the same time, like, if they have to push it like that so that people of diverse background can be cast and can be involved in the film, then, like, I would deal with it. You know, I would rather they didn't. I think we may have mentioned last time, was it Marvel that was saying, like, yeah, how diverse, like, oh, yeah, because Ava DuVernay, they were trying to get her involved. And they were like, we want to have one of our diverse films. And we were like, oh, facepalm. But, you know,
kudos to DC for not saying this is our diverse director.
Well,
this is just them going,
they
this
haven't
is our director.
Said it, but it's also, I mean, it's kind of implied because DC have been pushing Aquaman and Wonder Woman as, I guess, the answer to Marvel's refusal to have a diverse lineup. So, you know, they don't need to say it. It becomes clear. And I think obviously it's like a fantastic opportunity for him. And I'm very excited to see what he does with it. I am not going to rewatch Saw to like investigate his directing style. I'm definitely not doing that, but you know, we will see as we go. Just while we're talking of DC, we also had some news for Wonder Woman. Chris Pine is apparently in talks to co-star. This is obviously opposite Gal Gadot in the Wonder Woman movie that we will be getting in 2017, so far away. But he is in talks to play Steve Trevor, who is the love interest. And I mean, whatever. I don't have any opinion on Chris Pine. Like, I'm just excited because the more they announce about Wonder Woman, the less chance they have to be like, just kidding, we're not going to make this movie. So any announcements are fine by me. I just don't even care what they are at this point, as long as we get the movie at the end.
All I can think is Marvel are kind of seething off in a corner somewhere going, no, they took our other white guy called Chris.
Yeah, I think someone commented that on the article. That was
brilliant. I actually really like Chris Pine a lot. Mostly from having listened to him in interviews, like especially with him like opposite Zachary Quinto when they do like the Star Trek press.
Yeah,
presses.
Those are great interviews.
They, like, those two together, like, they're both insanely intelligent guys. Like, just watching them together, it's, I can barely look away. And I think, like, even on the screen, he's a really, really good actor. I will apologize, I actually recently rewatched the first Star Trek movie, which I unapologetically still quite love.
Why are you apologizing?
I like the Star Trek movies.
I just don't like J.J. Abrams' like objectification of women throughout them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if I can take off my furious feminist hat for a second, like, they're enjoyable films, and I love Star Trek, so...
Yeah, I rewatched it. I got back into it, like, a week ago. So, like, someone drew a fan art of Bones.
Okay,
and then
tangent.
Yeah, but I love him a lot. Like, he's really, really great. So I'm actually quite excited that he's joining a superhero franchise because I'm always excited to see more of him.
So do you think he would be good for this character?
I think he's really adaptable as an actor. So I think he'll be really good against Gal Gadot. So, yeah, I think he will be good for it.
All right. Exciting times in the world of superheroes. I feel like I'm more excited for DC's films than Marvel's. Like, I'm excited for Marvel's because I'm more invested in the Marvel characters, I guess. And obviously, you know, I'm super excited for Civil War despite all of my misgivings. But, like, in general, the DC slate, it's more exciting to me than the Marvel slate. Probably because the films I want to watch are not coming until 2018. So... whatever.
Do you know what? I wouldn't disagree with that. The more that I'm seeing of stuff like Aquaman.
Very posh of here.
Oh, God. You know, the more I'm seeing of it, the more excited I am. And obviously Wonder Woman. I love Wonder Woman anyway.
Who doesn't love Wonder Woman?
She's amazing. And she's so great. But yeah, the more and more that I see of it, the more I'm going, oh man, yes, I'm super excited for this. And then someone will remind me Ant-Man's coming out, and I'm like, they're going, oh yeah, so it is. Because I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting Ant-Man is a thing.
I had forgotten until you literally just reminded me.
But yeah, I'm definitely, definitely excited for both of those films. And yes, again, I agree with you, I'm excited for Civil War. I'm just maybe slightly more excited for Aquaman and Wonder Woman over that.
Yeah, I mean, we're excited for Civil War because we love Captain America, but it's just the film is just doesn't seem like it's going to be good. But anyway, we will keep an open mind and we will see. Yeah, Ant-Man, who cares? No one's paying attention to that. I know some people. You know what? If you're a listener and you are genuinely excited about Ant-Man, I would like you to explain to me why, because like I don't get it. I mean, I love Paul Rudd as well, and you know, I think the film looks cool, but at the same time it just looks so stupid and it's Ant-Man. So please let us know on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast or in the comments on this post on Hyperbole. Give me like your pitch. How would you sell Ant-Man to someone who either like doesn't know what it is or is underwhelmed by the whole just existence of it? Because I would love to be excited about it. So that will be a challenge. You might be able to convince Donya about it. I'm a little more difficult perhaps to win over. But anyway, that's all the major news for movies for this week. We also found out on the Marvel side that Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the first draft, has been completed. James Gunn tweeted about it, so everyone went crazy because, you know, that's very exciting stuff. You know, whatever. And then we also found out, and please, we are not going to talk about this for very long, but Spider-Man. Spider-Man developments. Guys, it's my favorite time of the show when we get to talk about... Oh, who am I kidding? Okay, so we had some director news for Spider-Man. This is for the solo film that we are getting in 2017. And apparently the two directors that they're coming down to are Ted Melfi, who directed St. Vincent, and Jonathan Levine, who did Warm Bodies, which I loved. I loved Warm Bodies. I would love to see a Spider-Man film in the style of Warm Bodies, because, like, that was great. I haven't seen St. Vincent, so I can't, you know, compare. Do you have a preference between either of those two?
I will admit to having seen neither of those movies.
You haven't seen Warm Bodies?
You didn't let me finish! Warm Bodies is on my... Like, it's moving to the top of my list of films that I'm, like, I've got a backlog on and need to watch. I didn't catch it while it was at the cinema. I'd meant to see it at the cinema and never got round to it because of, I don't know, some, like, other things cropping up all the time.
But it's moving. He also did 50-50 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, if you've seen that, which is a fantastic movie. I also love that movie.
Both Warm Bodies, if you know, the selling point.
Well, you haven't seen that either?
I haven't seen it either. Like, both Warm Bodies and 50-50, not even kidding, have now moved into the next 10 movies that I'm watching.
Well, I would hope so. You need to do Spider-Man research. Ted Melfi has done not a lot, except for St. Vincent. He's done some short films, and he's been a producer for a lot of things, but... Yeah, I haven't seen St. Vincent, so I don't know. Can't comment. Although I do love Bill Murray. Yeah, so that's what's happening on the Spider-Man front in terms of director. In terms of star, it seems that Asa Butterfield, despite all reports to the contrary, might not actually have the role locked up, which is interesting. Marvel tested six actors recently. I think that was just over the past weekend. So there was Asa Butterfield, Tom Holland, and then four others. I just don't care. I talked about this a little on Hype this week, so I guess if you want to listen to me like rage about where is Miles Morales, you can listen to that. But they all look the same. They all look very young. I don't care about 14-year-old Peter Parker. I don't care about the origin story for Peter Parker. I just don't care anymore. But the reason that they obviously need to get a move on with this is that we are expecting Spider-Man to appear in Civil War, and Civil War is already in production. So they do need to get on with that that old casting, and we'll find out.
Do
you have a preference for any of these boys who look literally identical to each other?
No, I have absolutely zero preference between all of these actors. At this point, I just want them, like, I just want it to be over and done with already.
Yes.
I think that's the point that I've got to, is that, do you know what? I'm just sick of the rumors. I'm just sick of, like, the same faces being trotted out over and over again. I literally just don't. I've stopped caring.
It's Spider-Man fatigue, isn't it?
It's kind of like, it was great. It was like, oh my god, it's a really, really great collaboration now between Sony and Marvel. This could mean amazing things. This could mean like something completely different. They could completely like change this up. They could make this really, really interesting. And then it's just kind of fallen flat for me.
Yeah.
Like that initial excitement about it has kind of worn off. And now the more and more rumors that come out, the less and less excited I'm getting about it. You know, and maybe one of these actors will change my mind, whoever they cast and whenever the film comes out. And even if we see him in Civil War, I'm open-minded enough that, you know, they may change my mind completely on this when it finally gets to the screen. But for right now, I'm so tired and I'm so over it. I just want something concrete so that we can move on, because going over the same rumors and the same kind of actors over and over and over again. And also, I don't know how they're going to pull off a load of 19, 20-year-olds looking 14.
Oh, because they all look really young, though. Like, have you looked at them?
They don't look 14, though.
Oh,
I would say
Asa Butterfield looks about 12. I mean, okay, I'll give them that. They have definitely cast the baby face well.
Yeah, that one, Asa Butterfield, out of all of them, is the youngest looking. The other ones, I would put in at around the 16, 17-year-old mark, for the most part.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's probably because they want people who are over 18 so that they can get around the film. Like, the filming restrictions are a lot different if you're dealing with adult versus kids. I don't begrudge them that at all. That doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, watch Glee and see, like, a 45-year-old play a 17-year-old, or, like, whatever they cast at it.
It's the same on Teen Wolf as well.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the old...
Just cast him already, please.
I don't know. They all look the same to me. I can't even... Whatever. Okay, and then finally for news this week, we have official confirmation. Again, these are more rumors that were floating around. Batman has been seen on the Suicide Squad set. We had been hearing for a while that Batman was probably going to appear in Suicide Squad so they could get the old cross promotion happening. But some people who caught some of the filming have uploaded some videos from it, and you can see the Batmobile, and you can see Batman, and the Joker, obviously. That's what's going to happen. So, yeah, that's a thing that's happening for those people who are excited or not excited.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are kind of going on about how, like, the Joker is going to be, like, part of the Suicide Squad kind of thing. What I think this is, rather than, I think this is going to be more flashback than, you know, actually him being in the Suicide Squad. I think, from what I can see from, like, the filming things and what I would assume, is that this is probably the bit where Joker goes to Arkham Asylum, probably, and Harleen isn't quite Harley Quinn fully yet, and this could be like where it splits off and she becomes like taken into like the Suicide Squad and he ends up at Arkham Asylum. So I would be okay with that.
Yeah,
like, I'd like that direction.
That's fine, and I agree. I think that's probably what this scene is, but at the same time, they have made the Joker the center of the promotional campaign, which tells me that he's going to be more than, like, a cameo in flashbacks to establish Harley Quinn, which that is my concern with this. I don't think he's going to be in the Suicide Squad, but it certainly seems like he's going to be a big focus of the movie. And while I can understand why they are doing that, because no one has heard of any of the other characters and everyone knows the Joker, it's not really what the Suicide Squad is. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe it's a bait and switch, a Batman and switch. And, you know, it'll be like, just kidding, he's in 3 minutes of the movie and you are all worried about his weird face tattoos, but maybe not. So anyway, yeah, that's it for news this week. Let us know your thoughts on these stories on Twitter at Hero Hack Podcast, or in the comments as always on this post. And, you know, it's gonna be a little quieter without all of the TV stuff happening, so if there is a story that comes out that you would really like us to talk about, just let us know and I'm sure we will be able to fit it in. Okay, that's it. So it's time for our quotes of the week. Donya, please explain this.
I was channel hopping. during the week, and a rerun of The Avengers was on TV. So I decided, oh, why the hell not? Let's just stop and let's rewatch The Avengers while it's on TV. And so, surprising absolutely no one, my quote of the week is a Hawkeye quote, because every single time in this movie, this line gets me. And it's when he says to Captain America, "Captain, it would be my genuine pleasure." Just every single time, that shivers through me, because I'm just like, it's just the way he says it. It's the delivery of the line. I'm just like, ah, oh, yeah, I'm terrible. I know you're probably judging me from the other side of the world right now.
I'm just thinking that it's a shame that Jeremy Renner has worked so hard in the last few weeks to make me hate him so much.
No.
Because I just find it really hard to get excited about his Hawkeye now, even though I enjoyed it before, but now I just think Jeremy Renner is like the worst human being, so it's difficult. But moving from the worst human to the best human, I guess I'm kind of cheating, not really a quote, but I'm giving my quotes of the week to Hayley Atwell, who is on the Civil War set. And she tweeted a lot of photos and, you know, the inside of Chris Evans' fridge. Apparently it's full of muscle milk and et cetera. So, yeah, I'm giving her all of my quotes for all of her tweets this week, because that was a lot of fun. And she seems like the best person in the world. So take from that what you will. I think I definitely won. And keeping with the keeping with the Marvel ladies, it's time for our Comic Corner. This was also a request from Chloe, was it?
Yeah, yes. This is part two of her request.
Yes, Chloe asked for Thor, and then Chloe also asked for Scarlet Witch. So you see, sometimes if you ask for more than one, we will do it, because we're nice people. If you have a character you would like to get some comic book recommendations for where to get started, it can be all a little overwhelming, let us know on Twitter or in the comments. This is... vaguely Avengers, vaguely X-Men related. We've talked before about Scarlet Witch's interesting background, so there's a bit of crossover here, but hopefully this will get you started, Chloe.
Yes. So the first one that I've got is Essential Classic X-Men Volume 1, which collects the first 24 issues of Uncanny X-Men, and it basically includes Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's debut. She's not really a central character of the story, but it's a really, really essential foundation for the relationships between her and Magneto and her and Quicksilver that influence and sometimes haunt Wanda through the rest of her comic history. The next one I've got is Avengers, The Vision and the Scarlet Witch, which is Wanda's first starring role alongside her to-be husband, Vision. In fact, they get married in this trade. Wanda and Vision decide to take a leave of absence from the Avengers in order to try and live a normal life in New Jersey, of all places. But that's easier said than done. They end up having to fight off villains left and right. But this trade also sees the birth of Scarlet Witch and Vision's twin sons, Thomas and William, who go on to become founding members of the Young Avengers. Next one I've got is Avengers Assemble Volume 1. I can't recommend Kurt Busiek's entire run on Avengers enough, but the place to start is this first collection of his epic run. Avengers Assemble kind of harks back to a very Silver Age feel of comics, and it features a great story between Wanda and Wonder Man. Which brings up some interesting questions about identity, because Wonder Man and Vision kind of have a little bit of crossover. Next one I've got is The Avengers Disassembled, or The Avengers, Avengers Disassembled, as the title is. This one might be slightly more controversial, because people tend to love or hate Bendis' run on Avengers. But there's absolutely no denying that this book is a defining moment for Wanda in the comics, regardless of what you feel about Bendis. It acts as a precursor to House of M, which is another fantastic run for Wanda. And it kind of highlights her descent into madness and her all-out assault on the Avengers, which leads to the No More Mutants event. And the last one I've got is Avengers: The Children's Crusade. And whilst Children's Crusade is great, it is worth checking out Young Avengers before, if it's at all possible, as it does prominently feature that team throughout. Though Scarlet Witch is an undeniable highlight, especially her relationships with her sons, Billy and Tommy. It sees her return from death, drawing in everyone from the Avengers to the X-Men into an epic world-spanning battle. It builds up to the Avengers versus X-Men comics, but it does also work as a standalone.
Okay, so Chloe, you've got two sets of reading lists now, so we expect a status update after you have checked them out. That is non-negotiable. If you have recommendations, just like we gave Chloe, let us know and we'll totally do it. Although, you know, sometimes we have follow-up questions because we're thorough and that's what we do. Feedback time. I think last episode I mentioned that we had some longer comments left that we didn't have time to get to because of all of the finale madness. So we are going to get to some of those today. Mary said about Civil War and about being Avengers 2.5 that she's been thinking about it for a while. And do we think there is any possibility at all that the gazillion casting announcements for all of these crossover characters are going to be used more like cameos? I haven't read the comics, but if it's about this Registration Act thing being enforced, I've always thought that they might do a montage showing all the characters getting affected by the registration in their own way, but that's it, a cameo. Back to focus on the movie's actual characters, just to illustrate that the world is changing for superheroes by superheroes showing, wow, this is really going on and changing all of the world. I really hope that, that that's what it is. So my answer to this is twofold. I definitely agree. We may have talked about this previously, but they kind of need this big range of characters so that they can split and show that it's like Avenger versus Avenger and like hero versus hero, because it makes the Steve Turney split, you know, more defined and more emotional. So I totally agree about that in terms of the cameos. My problem with Civil War remains that Iron Man can't be a cameo because he is the opposing force in this. And that is where my central frustration lies, because he has to be prominent in the film, otherwise you wouldn't get the sense that it's really like Captain America versus Iron Man. And we have talked about how this is like a huge, huge event in the comics. So yeah, I'm not as worried about the cameos, although, you know, I do roll my eyes at every announcement that we get. But my main concern is really the fact that it's Civil War means it kind of has to be even between Cap and Iron Man. And for me, that means that it shouldn't be a Cap film because it doesn't seem fair. But I don't know if you have any different thoughts on that, Danya.
No, I'm pretty much in the same vein. I mean, the nature of Civil War is that you're supposed to draw your own conclusions about who is right and who is wrong and which side you fall on. So in the aim to get there, you're right, it is going to have to be pretty much an equal split between Steve and Tony, because otherwise you're not going to be able to build up good arguments on either side to genuinely split your audience, like completely down the middle. Like, you're going to have about half of your audience who are going to side with Captain America and half that are going to side with Iron Man. That's the nature of Civil War, is that the arguments are going to be put forward and you're going to choose your side based on, I guess, your own kind of thoughts and feelings and experiences in your own life. You're going to react more strongly with one character or the other. But again, that means that it's going to be an even split between the two characters in the movie. There's no escaping that. They can't get around it. They chose Civil War, and Civil War is not just a Captain America story. It is Captain America and Iron Man together. So again, it is Avengers 2.5. it's that simple. It's not going to be a Captain America movie in the way that we've become accustomed to, which is a shame. It really, really is. Because, you know, Infinity War is another really great storyline, and it has been building up to that for a very, very long time. But I think, personally, I would have preferred to have seen Captain America 3 reintroduce Bucky and Bucky's connection to Tony and build that up and lay some more kind of seeds for Civil War. And I would have preferred the third Avengers movie to have been Civil War if that was the direction they wanted to go in, and then push off Infinity War to being like the fourth and fifth Avengers movie. And I know that that's a long, long haul and that's like a long game, but for me, that probably would have worked better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If only they had to squeeze in a Spider-Man movie before Civil War, because turns out that's the only thing that they'll move things around for. Okay, Amalia asked us a very an interesting question on our two episodes ago. This is about the Hulk and about the, I guess, continuity between the Incredible Hulk and Mark Ruffalo's Hulk in the Avengers movies. Because, as Amalia points out, she thought that, you know, they're two really entirely different characters in terms of, like, the way that they are presented. So she had resigned herself to the fact that the amazing 2008 Hulk movie is not really part of the MCU canon. Then suddenly General Ross will be in Civil War, played by the same guy who played him in the 2008 film. What is up with this? Did the Incredible Hulk happen or didn't it? That's a super interesting question, because I had also assumed that, no, it had not happened. I mean, you know, that the events of that particular movie had not happened, although, I mean, in like a headcanon-y way, some of them may have happened to inform Bruce's character in the Avengers. So I kind of assumed when we heard this casting announcement that that film still hadn't really happened, but they enjoyed the character, like they enjoyed the casting, and so they wanted to bring him back. But I also didn't really like the Incredible Hulk. So Donya might have a more in-depth and more considered answer to this.
I'm not sure that I would. I mean, I didn't necessarily think that it wasn't canon because, and the only reason because I thought that they were going to keep this in their canon is if you look on Amazon, they have a really awesome Phase 1 collection box that's basically the case from the first Avengers movie with the Tesseract in it. And in that collection, the first movie is the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, interesting.
It's part of that box set. So I didn't necessarily think that it wasn't part of canon. They do reference some of the events that happen in that movie in the Avengers. Like, I think it's a little bit in when he's talking with Black Widow in the little hut. I'm pretty sure he references one of the events from the Incredible Hulk in there.
They reference some stuff, but at the same time, like, if people have, I mean, not that many people saw the Incredible Hulk, but if you have seen the Incredible Hulk and then you've watched Mark Ruffalo play the Hulk, like, they are two completely different Bruce Banners. You know, I mean, not just in terms of the way that they play the Hulk, but just in terms of, like, the way that they Hulk out and the way they control that and, you know, all of those things are totally different. Maybe it's that all of the surrounding events happened and we just have to accept that this is who the character is now.
Yeah, I think that's the direction that they're going in, personally, is that the events happened but not with the character that not with the Bruce Banner that was in the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, you just have to transplant Ruffalo's banner into that film.
Yeah. However, that then it leaves a load of like gaping holes in their own continuity, pretty much. Like, again, Betty Ross is such a huge part of Bruce Banner's whole story, and obviously Age of Ultron shows that, you know, Betty Ross clearly isn't a big part of his life anymore, which
yes.
is a shame, because I actually really, really like of everything in The Incredible Hulk. Like, it's like I'm kind of on the fence with that movie. I neither love nor hate it. But Betty Ross was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I loved her in that movie.
I
like,
would agree
so,
with
so,
that.
So much.
The Incredible Hulk just did not make an impression on me. Like, I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. But I like that you're a fan of it, Amalia, because I feel like it doesn't have enough, like, big fans. Not many people would be like, my favorite, like, phase one, Incredible Hulk. Definitely Incredible Hulk. So, yeah. Props to you. And Amalia also had a second question, which we are going to ask because we liked the first one so much. Well, a comment more than a question. On our last episode, episode 15, about the Supergirl pilot. And she said, even though I was blown away by Supergirl as a whole, I do think it reinforces some of the tiresome stereotypes Saturday Night Live was poking fun at. This is in the Black Widow Saturday Night Live trailer. In general, I think the DC TV portrayal of women is less diverse than Marvel TV, which is one of the reasons I generally prefer Marvel. So that's kind of two parts of that. I still think that comparing the Black Widow trailer and comparing Supergirl is like a poor exercise. You can like compare Supergirl to other TV shows, compare it to like The Flash and Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I think is what you're talking about in the second half of that, but comparing it to like a 2-minute parody trailer that to me was making like a very specific joke about the way that we consume media about women, and the fact that apparently in order for us to have like a solo Black Widow film, it would have to take out all of the aspects of Black Widow that people enjoy and make it this like tired, conservative, kind of very predictable, you know, rom-com that like fit into all of those tropes. Like, we can disagree about that, but for me, like, that was really the central point the trailer was trying to make. So I don't see there being like a great deal of insight to be gained by comparing the two. In terms of DC versus Marvel, that's really interesting. I would agree with that, definitely. We talk a lot, I'm sure you have heard us, we complain a lot, maybe is the better word, about the portrayal of women in Arrow and The Flash. And, you know, I don't think that they get women perfectly on Marvel either, but certainly Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the women play a bigger role, because in Agent Carter, obviously Peggy Carter is the lead, and in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's arguably a more, like, community based show versus Arrow and The Flash, which are really about Oliver and about Barry, you know, so the women become secondary characters to that, and in many cases are used to make the man's story progress, which is not something I'm okay with, but sometimes they get it really right as well in DC, so, you know, I try and give them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I would agree with that, but I still really like Arrow and The Flash, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I think another thing about Supergirl in terms of it versus that Saturday Night Live trailer, having watched the pilot now, it's very, very obvious that Kara chose her profession specifically because it is an expected or a kind of
generic, normal
role for her to take, because the whole point is that she's trying to blend in and be completely unassuming and go entirely under the radar and almost be overlooked. That's kind of the vibe I was getting, is the whole point of her having that job is to be overlooked. So
I would agree with that.
That's kind of the way that I was seeing, and the whole thing of Supergirl as a whole is that it's going to subvert that as the series continues, is the way that I see it going. So setting it up as, yes, we know this is a very cliche setup and a very cliche role for a female character, but we're going to like flip it on its head kind of thing.
Yeah, it's intentionally cliche.
And it's not even to take away from people who do that job. There are both women and men who are in that kind of field or who even do that job who love it and who are amazing at it and that sort of thing. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the variety of women that they put forward in Supergirl to show them from being, you know, to the slightly harder, kind of colder character to the warmer, bubbly, kind of really feminine characters, you know, and everything in between, the homely kind of characters and like the mother and, you know, everything. Like, the thing that Supergirl has over that trailer is that it has more breadth of female characters that it can show. It can show so many angles of femininity and just women in general that it has a really, really good jumping off point that I think narrowing it down to just like being that stereotypical view is writing it off before it really has a chance to get past the pilot, which is obviously just an establishing like episode to basically set up these are these characters and we're going to turn it all on its head now. So I kind of agree that it is playing off those cliches. I do have hope that it's going to push further than that, though.
Yeah, so we will see. Obviously, DC has not always gotten it right, Black Canary. Anyway, if you have a question or comment, let us know in the comments and we will get to it next time. Now it's time for question of the week. Last time we asked you, what breaking news story would you most like to see make the headlines? And Donya, what did people have to say?
So Kate, who was at KateLouise2, said, I've been hoping that I'll wake up one day and the news headline will be Marvel drops Black Widow movie like Beyonce.
It's the best. Kate won this week. Don't even read any of the rest. No, I'm kidding. We're going to read them all. But seriously, Kate, like, just don't even tease me. But that is amazing.
Yeah. Nick, who is at Rantouch, maybe? Rantouch? Sorry if I got that wrong. Please do let me know in a comment or something if I pronounced it incorrectly, and I'll do it right next time. Said, headline, Marvel realizes too many heroes in Cap 3, renames the film to simply Marvel Civil War.
Perfect. Which, also, you know, don't tease us, you know, Nick.
Yeah. Michael, who is an Eagles lament, says, my dream. Breaking news, Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Agent Carter movies confirmed for Phase 4. Also, Peggy Carter is somehow brought into the present, slash is an Avenger, and Kamala Khan is in the MCU, slash Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I'm on board with all of these.
Funny, I read a very, very vague rumor that started circulating in kind of like a couple of places saying that like Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Kamala Khan are TV options, possibly, that S.H.I.E.L.D. are looking at. They're looking at, like, Miss Marvel, and they're also looking at the Netflix, like, Phase 2 lineup.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I remember reading it, I think it was yesterday or the day before.
I haven't seen that, but I also heard another rumor that instead of that, the Phase 2 of Netflix is just going to be 4 different Spider-Man series with 4 different actors playing them. I believe the characters who don't make the cut to star in the Spider-Man film will actually each get a mini series on Netflix.
Yeah.
So you heard it here first.
Yeah, I think the other ones that were on the kind of list of, like, the Phase 2 were, like, Punisher, Blade, and Ghost Rider. So obviously sticking with the kind of darker Marvel side for Netflix.
Yeah, I feel but, like we've heard that Ghost Rider rumor before.
Anything would be better than the movie.
Okay, well, maybe that's happening. We don't know. Michael, can you see the future? Let us know. Maybe you're just in Australia. Okay, our question of the week for this time is, as we talked about Aquaman, we want to know, which director would you like to see take on a superhero movie next? And I would like to know which movie, not just the director. And why? Let us know on Twitter, at Hero Hype Podcast, or in the comments on this post on Hyperbull. Do you have a pick? Do you have an answer?
Oh, I'll have to think about it. I'll get back to you guys on the next episode because there are a few directors that I like, but I need to match them up to the right movie. So I'll get back. I'll answer it on the next episode when we're reading out the other answers.
Okay. So answer it then. Oh, well, I'm just going to steal your answer, which is that, I mean, ever since you mentioned it, now I just will not accept any director except Kathryn Bigelow for Captain Marvel. So
yeah. Okay, cool. You steal that one and I'll try and
Donya like fan cast directors the way other people like fan cast actors, so there's nothing to worry about. Sure you have a list somewhere and it's like color coded and it's chronologically arranged and it's just that definitely exists.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. I'm not far off. Okay, that is it for Hero Hype this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks, as always, with all of the latest news and thoughts and ready to answer your questions and tell you why we disagree with things that you say, or maybe agree, who knows. Let us know your thoughts on our question of the week and all of these news stories. And if you have a minute and you enjoy the show, we would really appreciate if you could take the time to very quickly give us a rating and review on iTunes. Just help share the show and let other people who are big superhero nerds like us find it. And we can be one big superhero family. So who doesn't want that? So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.